IVM.
Welcome to All Things Policy, a daily podcast supported by Pragati, a flagship media initiative of the Takshashila Institution. We are a bunch of policy nerds based in Bengaluru, and we like to bring fresh perspectives to Indian affairs and an Indian perspective to global affairs. So grab a cup of coffee, sit back, and join us for today's chat.
Hello and welcome to All Things Policy. I am Suyash Desai and I am joined today by Shrey Khanna, who is my colleague at the Takshashila Institution. We are here to discuss the China-Pakistan Economic Corridor. As all of you are already aware, the China-Pakistan Economic Corridor is a collection of infrastructure projects worth around 46 to 50 billion. Initial purpose of this project was to deepen the economic ties between the People's Republic of China and Pakistan. The CPEC will connect China's largest province, Xinjiang Autonomous Region, to Pakistan's Gwadar port in Balochistan. It was launched in 2015 and passes through Pakistan-occupied Kashmir and Balochistan, both of which, as you are aware, are the long-running insurgent provinces in the state of Pakistan. To discuss what has happened in the past 5 years and where are we heading with CPEC, Shrey, thank you so much for coming on the podcast.
Suyash, thanks for having me.
Okay, Shrey, so let's start with the current state of CPEC. What do you think? Where do you think CPEC is right now?
So, well, the CPEC is facing trouble for quite some time now. China has remained dissatisfied with the progress on many of the projects. And this came out prominently last month when Pakistani newspaper Dawn, it reported that during a Senate meeting, standing committee meeting, its chairman said that Chinese are crying, quote unquote, as progress has not happened in last 3 years and that the Chinese ambassador has complained to him regarding this. Now, China's problem with the state of CPEC are not unfounded. 2020 CSIS report on CPEC pointed out that only quarter of the 120 odd announced projects have moved towards completion in last 5 years. And most of these projects, they are in Punjab and Sindh, whereas the projects that were conceptualized in Balochistan, KPK, and Pakistan-occupied Kashmir, they have barely moved forward. Now, importantly, a major selling point of CPEC in Pakistan was that it will be a game-changer initiative that will transform the nation. But on this count, the CPEC has failed spectacularly. Of the 11 special economic and industrial zones that are currently planned, only one in Gwadar, where a 25-acre modern industrial park has been completed, and that too has received very little economic activity. So there is quite limited value addition in terms of utility of CPEC. But it is not only China which has problems with the state of CPEC. There is an element of environment degradation as well, because the energy projects, they account for nearly two-thirds of CPEC funding. And of those projects, around 40% of the plant generation capacity, it uses coal, which has given rise to the concerns about the high public health cost of pollution in Pakistan. Then, as we all know about the debt trap, the infamous debt trap, there are perennial concerns regarding the debt trap put out in Pakistan. Right now, Pakistan owes more than 27% of its external debt to China, which is up from 9%. In 2013, when initial talks of CPEC started. And the official figures, they indicate that by the end of this year, Pakistan's total debt servicing liability would go up to $14 to $15 billion. For context, even after the IMF allocation of $2.7 billion and Pakistan's own borrowing through Eurobonds, its forex reserves are around $20 billion. And right now, what they're doing is, They're taking money through one source to pay off loans to other sources. Now, not only this is unsustainable in the long term, but this sort of activity requires Islamabad to follow dictates, not only from China, but also from its other financiers like Saudi Arabia and UAE, which create problem in its relationship with Iran, because these are Iran's regional rivals. And lastly, the most important is the overarching security threat to these projects. There have been successive attacks by Balochistan Liberation Army, BLA, in Gwadar. In 2019, there was siege of BRI-linked hotel in Quetta that went on for more than 24 hours. And now there's an added factor of a resurgent Tehrik-e-Taliban Pakistan, which has launched attack on Chinese workers. Most prominent being the one in July this year on Dasu Hydropower Project. Now, Dasu Hydropower Project is the largest of the CPEC energy projects, where a Chinese company is building 4,320 megawatt of capacity dam on the Indus River. It is a World Bank backed project located in the KPK Upper Kohistan area. There are a number of Chinese companies working on the project. China Ganzuba Group company, which is performing civil contracts. Then there is a Civil Engineering Construction Corporation. It is also working, extending the road of Karakoram Highway in the Upper Kohistan area. Then there is Gansu International Corporation. It is also working in making infrastructure related to the project. So this attack that happened in July, soon after this attack, Pakistan's finance minister, he was on a visit to Beijing. And during that visit, he was almost given like an ultimatum to by China to bring the perpetrators to justice. As Wang Yi, he said that this is the biggest terrorist attack suffered by Chinese nationals abroad in the recent times. And work on the project has remained stalled since the attack. And it was reported last week in Business Recorder that China is asking compensation of $38 million from Pakistan for the dead and injured Chinese workers. So it has linked the resumption of work with payment of compensation. And this is very tricky for Pakistan, because if Pakistan accepts this compensation demands and there are going to be a likely future incidents, then it will have to again pay the compensation. So it is likely to pay, but amount is not decided. So there is problem regarding that as well. So yeah, there is growing trouble which is brewing between China and Pakistan on more than one issue as far as CPEC is concerned.
That's very interesting, Shrey. From what you spoke, I think that it will be completely opening the Pandora's box for Pakistan if they accept the compensation demand. While you were speaking, your thoughts reminded me of the book that I was reading recently. It was Andrew Small's book on China-Pakistan axis. An interesting anecdote was given about how CPEC was formed and what are the projects that are conceived in which provinces by China. That's one. But very recently, I was also reading a paper that is China's Kashmir policy. And insight from that paper is that China has largely remained away from initiating many projects in Pakistan-occupied Kashmir. And it has, as you have rightly pointed out, focused on Punjab provinces, Punjab and surrounding provinces for CPEC projects. So that is something that is very interesting that came out of your conversation or your thoughts on CPEC. Quickly moving on to the next question, Shrey. So how do you think Pakistan's domestic politics influences CPEC?
So when the CPEC was launched in 2015, it was, as I said, termed as a game changer that will solve all of Pakistan's problem. And it continues to be seen that way, despite all the troubles. For Pakistani elite, both military and civilian, the success of CPEC is linked with their national interests. But that does not mean that it is not an issue in their domestic politics. So, for example, after Imran Khan came to power in 2018, several of the projects were scaled back. For example, the cost of rail line between Peshawar and Karachi, it was reduced by $2 billion. And $14 billion Diamer Bhasha Dam, it was excluded from the CPEC after Beijing placed conditions that notably the ownership of the project will belong to China. So then Finance Minister Asad Omar, he had said that, these CPEC agreements, they would be placed before the parliament to ensure transparency. But then Imran established the CPECA, which is CPEC authority, in October 2019, before his visit to Beijing, which was by this time exerting pressure on Islamabad due to slow progress on CPEC. And because this reliance on external support is permanent, we see similar reverse course with states like Sri Lanka and the U-turn President Sirisena took on Colombo Port City project. But coming back to Pakistan, the decision to establish CPECA was vociferously opposed by all opposition parties, including PMLN, under whom the CPEC started. These parties argued that vast powers given to CPECA would undermine parliamentary authority. And then after coming back from China, Imran Khan appointed retired Lieutenant General Asim Salim Bajwa as chairman of China-Pakistan Economic Corridor. So it was seen as, an act now there is CPEC is under the military's authority and away from civilian control. That appointment was for 4 years. Again, there were round of protests. And in August this year, even General Bajwa was removed before even the completion of 2 years. And a civilian, Khalid Mansoor, was appointed as a special assistant to Prime Minister on CPEC. So Mansoor has vast corporate experience in energy and petrochemical sector, and he has dealt extensively with Chinese companies before. And now for right now, CPECA, it has been kind of shelved. There is no one who's chairing it, and it is now likely to become a civilian part of civilian section of the CPEC, unlike the earlier times when General Bajwa was heading it. But even if you discount this opportunistic political opposition, on grassroots, there is palpable anti-China sentiment brewing. So other than the attacks on Chinese consulates and the CPEC projects, there have been several local incidents where Chinese nationals have been shot dead by unidentified men. So because media is largely censored in Pakistan related to army and strategic affairs, so these acts do not get that publicity. And there have been reports of mass protests as well. In fact, in August this year, The Guardian, it reported that fishermen and other local workers, they blocked the roads in Gwadar and largely shut down the city to protest against the Chinese trawlers, which are illegally fishing in the nearby waters. And then, according to these fishermen, that they were taking fish to China. And, if I'm not mistaken, even in the starting and introduction or prologue, he talks about this Red Mosque incident. And if you go back a few years, right, it was events in Red Mosque in Islamabad in 2007 that played an instrumental role in the rise of TTP when President Musharraf had cracked down upon the Islamist militants who had kidnapped Chinese nationals due to their alleged immoral acts of running massage parlors. So this anti-China sentiment, it also runs quite deep and affects both domestic politics and security situation as far as this rise in terrorism in Pakistan is concerned.
Thanks, Shreya. It was really insightful. Before we move on to our next question, I would like to take a small ad break. We'll return in no time. Thanks. Hi, welcome back. The Red Mosque, as you have rightly pointed out in Andrew Small's book, as you have rightly highlighted, which Andrew Small has mentioned in his book, clearly was a tipping point in the China-Pakistan relations from when everything started going down, relatively downwards. Since you have already highlighted a lot of troubles that have been brewing in the relations between China and Pakistan, my next question to you is whether the relationship or the alliance is really deeper than ocean, higher than mountain, sweeter than money, and so on, as they claim. What can you tell us about the broader China-Pakistan alliance in the region, considering all these factors that you have already accounted for in your analysis?
So, it's an accepted fact, that China-Pakistan axis, it stems from their rivalry with India. New Delhi is the primary and existential threat for Islamabad, whereas for Beijing, it's a secondary threat. So this alliance works to contain India in South Asia and increases costs for New Delhi to emerge as a great maritime power in the Indo-Pacific. So as far as that strategic alliance against India is concerned, it remains, like you said, deeper than ocean and higher than mountains and all that diplomatic jargon. And the, interestingly, you know, the roots of CPEC, they grow from the development of Karakoram Highway by China. Only after the highway became operational in 1980s, that did the Sino-Pak Entente gain strategic value in the South Asian balance. In fact, it was through this KKH Karakoram Highway that covert Chinese nuclear assistance to Pakistan materialized. Also, the transport of delivery system for Islamabad's nuclear devices as well as missile components, KKH played an important role. And if you focus on Gwadar, then we see growing militarization. There have been open source intelligence reports that they are constructing military facility there. So that strategic aspect of CPEC, especially Gwadar, it is going strong for both the nations. The problem becomes evident when this strategic partnership is seen in economic and commercial context, or when these initiatives have to traverse the landscape of Pakistani politics. But in larger context, if you see in Afghanistan right now, it wouldn't have been possible for China to exercise the kind of influence it enjoys in the Taliban without the ISI's facilitation. For years, China has funded the Peshawar Shura, which was created by the ISI and as an alternative power center in 2012, at least till 2016, it was reported that they were funding Peshawar Shura, and that brought them influence with Taliban. And right now, even if China is not comfortable with the dominance of Haqqani network in Kabul, but it is dealing with it because it's better than doing nothing. And Pakistan is, after all, there to safeguard its interest. On the other hand, one of the major reasons that Pakistan has not yet recognized Taliban, unlike 1996, is because the current setup is not acceptable to China, though it is working with Taliban, providing humanitarian aid, etc., promising future investment also. So what we see here is that as long as common anti-India bind of China and Pakistan stays, the reason for their convergence, the rationale for their convergence overpowers all the disruptions. But in situations where India is absent, the organizational differences or compositional differences or organizational differences between a communist China and an Islamist Pakistan, they reveal themselves, as is evident in Afghanistan or even as far as, you know, tensions in CPEC are concerned. But when India is concerned, yeah, that broader alliance, it stays, it is still going strong.
Thanks, Shreya. That's very nicely put. I like the way how you constructed the alliance between communist China and Islamic Pakistan is India based, and when India is out of question, how does the knots of alliance start losing? It's a very interesting way of putting things. With this, we would like to conclude this episode. Thank you, Shreya, for the insightful thought and joining us on this insightful discussion. For more such episodes, keep on listening to All Things Policy. Thank you.
If you liked our show, don't forget to check out other interesting podcasts on the IVM network. You can tune into them on the IVM Podcast app, ivmpodcast.com, or wherever you listen to your podcasts. You can also follow IVM on social media. The handle is @IVMPodcasts on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram. And hey, if you'd like to dive into Takshashila's research on technology, strategy, and economic affairs, check us out at our Twitter handle, @TakshashilaInst, or our website, takshashila.org.in.
Hey, hey, it's been another great week on the IVM Podcast Network. On All Things Policy, Ananya Desai and Rohan Pai discuss recurrent bans on fireworks during festive seasons in India and discuss possible solutions to tackle India's air pollution problem. On the Habit Coach podcast, Ashton Doctor welcomes Sahil Mehta, an esteemed mountaineer and author of the book Break Free. Sahil shares a transformative experience which became the catalyst for embracing discipline and fulfillment. The episode explores the profound impact of vulnerability on personal growth. Folks, if you like our shows, do spread the word. Tell your friends and don't forget to rate and review them wherever you're listening to them. Follow us on social media. We are IVM Podcasts on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram and LinkedIn. You'll also find all our shows on YouTube at youtube.com/IVM Podcasts. And finally, we would like to thank our sponsors this week: Omidyar Network India, Abbott, IDFC First Bank and Save Life Foundation. Thank you for making this possible.